The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters Podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. From the Capital One Bank studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Remembering George Herbert Walker Bush.
I want a kinder and gentler nation.
With McCain and now again with 41, it's one of those national gut checks on this is who we were and a question of where we're going and who we are now.
He was truly one of the kindest people that I ever knew. He probably had more friends than any president I ever knew.
A new study shows men are making far more than women on average than previously thought.
We are seeing the wage gap blow out. It's actually pretty astounding.
And country superstar Garth Brooks on his recent show at Notre Dame Stadium.
By the time you hit that stage, you felt so much like a family that it was just a party from the word go. It was a lot of fun.
I'm Bill Rakoff in for Steve Dorsey. George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st president of the United States, died Friday night at his home in Houston after suffering from complications of Parkinson's disease at age 94. Mr. Bush, affectionately known to the nation as 41, died months after his wife Barbara, following 73 years of marriage. Mr. Bush was the last president to see combat, having been a fighter pilot in World War II, and it's no surprise that his military bearing dictated his outlook on life.
I'm a man who sees life in terms of missions. Missions defined and missions completed.
Mr. Bush led his country as commander-in-chief through operations Desert Shield and Desert Storm following Iraq's invasion of Kuwait.
I can report to the nation, aggression is defeated, the war is over.
Domestically, Mr. Bush lauded volunteer organizations and groups working to make America better. 1,000 points of light, he called them.
I want a kinder and gentler nation.
I'm joined now by CBS News senior foreign affairs correspondent and Face the Nation moderator, Margaret Brennan. Margaret, let's talk about George H.W. Bush's foreign policy. It was an area of strength for the former president, but with President Reagan's Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall, I wonder if H.W. doesn't get the full credit for his role in bringing not only an end to the Cold War, but the overall demise of the Soviet Union itself and communism.
You know, these days we celebrate almost as a virtue not being too Washington and not having too much experience here. But H.W. had the kind of experience behind the scenes that wasn't so much political craft, but policy making, having served at the United Nations as ambassador, having been CIA director, having an idea of how to operate behind the scenes and at a time where the U.S. was becoming the world's only superpower. Right. You know, we had the archenemy of the USSR and watched that disintegrate on his watch and how he handled that. And how he positioned the United States and decided to engage diplomatically really did have a very long-lasting impact. President Barack Obama said in his view, H.W. is one of the most underrated presidents, in large part because of his foreign policy. And today, Chancellor Merkel, sitting next to President Trump, said, we will always remember Bush 41 as one of the fathers of reunified Germany. That could have gone a very different way as the Berlin Wall fell. Instead, he got helped to shepherd East and West Germany to not just work together, but to join NATO as a bulwark against the Soviet Union.
I heard one of his former aides elsewhere this morning talking about the idea that Bush didn't gloat about the fall of the Soviet Union. Instead, he was more worried about making sure that they had what they needed to succeed. And so instead of lording over them, he offered help, offered his hand.
That's right. He offered his hand, and in assuming that through strength you don't have to have the bluster, right? Very different sort of framing than the way things are handled now, with the current president saying it's so important to counterpunch. This was would have been, you know, punching someone when weak in a way that could have sent the Soviet Union in a very different direction. Remember, these were the satellite states starting to peel off under Bush's watch. And how he handled that helped to coax what became Russia in a different direction, at least for a time. And still, those painful scars are what you hear motivate Vladimir Putin of the disintegration of the Soviet Union. But that could have gone in a very different, more painful direction than it did. And one of the things that 41 gets credited with is his delicate diplomacy there, because he knew so well the ins and outs of how threatening the USSR actually was on their weapons side, because he had been CIA director. He knew what the actual arsenals looked like and why helping to sort of gently coax some of these Soviet states as they peeled off from really imploding themselves, why the U.S. needed to be engaging diplomatically.
And let's just flesh this out as we wrap it up, the notion that, you know, today we value the outsiders more than we do the insiders. But George H.W. Bush, as you've pointed out, was, you know, a wonk when it was cool to be a wonk.
He was a wonk, and in a way that, you know, maybe it didn't make for the most bombastic, most memorable personality. But that is what also President Obama said helped to give him the power and the strength, foreign policy wise, to have that legacy. And on the domestic side, clearly, he made some very difficult decisions that, for his own political health and longevity, didn't pay off, right? Deciding to go ahead with needing to raise some taxes, even though he had promised not to, because this had been, at that time, a real centerpiece of Republican platform, debts, right? And deficits. These days, we're not even talking about how to pay those down as tax cuts happen and the like. It was a sort of the old school Republican vanguard and one of the very few New England Republicans these days. Susan Collins may be one of the few others out there. And I know it was interesting. The very last tweet 41 sent was in defense of her, a fellow person, you know, with ties to Maine, a Republican, saying a New England moderate. He still stood up for because of her position on the Supreme Court justice in the fight over Kavanaugh.
And so that decision to raise taxes, he knew it would do him in with members of his party. And it might cost him his job ultimately, which it did in part. But, you know, he did it on a moral basis because he thought it was the right thing to do. I say this because within the space of 6 months now, we've lost two what you could best describe as moral centers in American government, with John McCain and George H.W. Bush. And I don't know why, but personally, I know that was heavy on my head this morning when I was driving in thinking about that and how things have changed.
I think that's right. I know certainly with McCain and now again with 41, it's one of those national gut checks on this is who we were and a question of where we're going and who we are now. Do those values that these individuals embodied still define who we want to be today? Or are we taking this country in a very different direction? Certainly the parties have gone in different directions than both of those two statesmen.
CBS News Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan, our thanks. Coming up next, CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy will discuss the latest in the Mueller investigation. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
He was convicted of various things unrelated to us, and he's a weak person. And by being weak, unlike other people that you watch, he's a weak person. And what he's trying to do is get a reduced sentence.
More turmoil for President Trump in the Mueller investigation. His former lawyer, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty this week to lying to Congress. We'll talk about the week that was at the White House with CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. A new study shows that men are making far more than women on average than previously thought. Later on the program, CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger has some thoughts as to why. And country superstar Garth Brooks talks about his recent sold-out show at Notre Dame Stadium. It's a concert that will air on CBS Sunday evening. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Bill Rakoff. It's been a busy week for the Mueller special counsel investigation, declaring that Paul Manafort, who pleaded guilty to federal fraud charges, has continued to lie to investigators even after reaching a plea deal with them.
Then, on Thursday, the news that President Trump's former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to a federal charge of lying to Congress over the timing of a potential deal to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. That brought the president out with both guns blazing.
He was convicted of various things unrelated to us, and he's a weak person. And by being weak, unlike other people that you watch, he's a weak person. And what he's trying to do is get a reduced sentence. So he's lying about a project that everybody knew about. I mean, we were very open with it. We were thinking about building a building. I guess we had in a form. It was an option. I don't know what you'd call it. I decided ultimately not to do it. There would have been nothing wrong if I did do it. If I did do it, there would have been nothing wrong. That was my business. So he's lying very simply to get a reduced sentence, okay? I run for president. That doesn't mean I'm not allowed to do business. I was doing a lot of different things when I was running. After I won, obviously, I don't do business from January 20th, but more importantly, which is a following year. But I ran a business. In fact, I often joke about the fact that I was the only person that campaigned and simultaneously ran a business. But that was a project that we didn't do. I didn't do. That was a project that wasn't done for a lot of reasons. Number one is that I was really, not that I had to do it, but I was focused on running for president. I wanted that to be my primary focus, not running or building a building.
Joining me now is CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy on a week to be remembered, I think, in the long term. Now, while people, Stephen, aren't necessarily going to remember the name Michael Cohen 50 to 60 years from now, what happened this week may certainly be an event that's remembered, at least in the presidency of Donald Trump. Too soon to say for sure how big an impact, but it certainly seems significant.
It's definitely significant. What also remains to be seen is the significance of what we did learn on Thursday as Michael Cohen entered a federal courtroom in Manhattan to plead guilty to one particular crime, and that was lying to Congress. What he told Senate investigators in the summer of 2017 that he finished working on a Trump Tower in Moscow around the time of the Iowa caucuses. Cohen admitted that, in fact, that work went on through June of 2016, so he lied about that. And he also revealed through his appearance in court and in documents submitted by the special prosecutor that he tried to set up a trip for then-candidate Trump to go to Russia to advance this tower project after Mr. Trump would have become the GOP nominee. In pleading guilty to that crime, Cohen has agreed to offer more help to the special counsel, and that is what could be the most significant thing that happened in the past week.
From a congressional standpoint, I mean, this is sort of a victory lap. Paul Ryan tried to take one yesterday saying, look, this is Congress at work, exercising oversight over the executive branch. We subpoenaed this guy. He came in. He didn't tell us the truth, and for that he should be prosecuted, but at least Congress is working. Okay.
It is very rare, we should point out, for someone to be prosecuted for or plead guilty to lying to Congress. There are a couple of notable examples. You can think of one from 2010 when Roger Clemens, the baseball great, was indicted by prosecutors for, in their mind, lying to Congress about his use of steroids. Ultimately, jurors sided with Clemens. He was acquitted. But that's one prominent example of someone being charged or brought into court for allegedly lying to Congress. In this case, special counsel went to Michael Cohen and said, we have evidence that you did lie to Congress and we intend to prosecute you on this and perhaps other things. Now, he's agreed to plead guilty to this one thing. What's so interesting is for President Trump, the first reaction that he gave to reporters when this all was reported on Thursday was to say that Michael Cohen is a liar, a weak person, not a very smart person, and the president says that Cohen is lying to get a reduced sentence. Now, the whole idea that the president is saying that Cohen is a liar and his people are saying that Cohen's a habitual liar, a congenital liar, is perhaps an effort on the president's part to inoculate himself from anything else that Cohen might say going forward. What you're clearly seeing on the part of the president and his lawyers is an effort to disqualify anything that Cohen might have to say going forward.
And speaking of lying, you have the Paul Manafort case this week where the special counsel threw out an allegation that said even post-cooperation agreement, Manafort has continued to lie to them. And they say they want to see him sentenced right away. But clearly you've got a lot of people here that, aren't being trusted by the authorities to believe that what's coming out of their mouth is true in this investigation.
Another important development in the past week, and we could put a bookmarker in it, is the fact that we learned that there's been this agreement between Manafort's defense lawyers and the president's defense lawyers to talk between amongst one another to essentially help strategize with one another. And we also learned this week that the president was aware of the fact that Cohen would be pleading guilty before it actually happened. So there is a lot going on behind the scenes that we're just coming into learning about. And it's another example of how Robert Mueller has been working aggressively behind the scenes. And there was a flurry of activity, a lot of important developments in the Russia probe in the past week.
CBS's Stephen Portnoy reporting from the White House. Thank you. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup. I'm Bill Rakoff. The personal information of as many as a half billion people at Starwood Hotels has been compromised.
I'm Gary Nunn. Marriott says its worldwide Starwood guest reservation database has been hacked, potentially exposing passport numbers and credit card information on guests dating back as long as 4 years. Up to 500 million people may be affected.
This seems like it's the second biggest data breach in history behind only Yahoo.
CreditCard.com analyst Ted Rossman says this is a wake-up call for all of us to protect our identity.
The best that I recommend is a credit freeze. It's free, and it's going to protect anybody from opening credit in your name.
A website and call center have been set up for anyone who believes that they might be at risk. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
We realize that lists are a rather subjective thing, with everyone having their own take, but nonetheless, we will present a report out of Italy now on the most influential films of all time. Here's CBS's Jim Taylor.
Some films are so original, everything that comes after seems derivative.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Researchers at the University of Turin, Italy, calculating influence scores for 47,000 films based on how each film has been referenced by subsequent movies. Number one, most influential, The Wizard of Oz.
I welcome you so much, Italy.
Followed by Star Wars. And then Psycho. Study results published in the Journal of Applied Network Science. Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Still to come, a new study shows the gender pay gap between men and women in the United States is worse than we thought. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up.
CBS News Special Report.
It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News with Jeff Glor.
We're going to begin with our interview with the president late this afternoon.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Bill Rakoff. A new report says that the gender gap when it comes to pay for men and women is much wider than previously thought. The Institute for Women's Policy Research report shows that women earn 49 cents for every dollar a man makes. That's far less than U.S. Census data that suggests that women earn 80 cents for every dollar a man makes. CBS This Morning's Bianca Golodriga sat down with CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger to talk about it.
The census looks back over a year. This new report looks back over 15 years. And what did it find?
And that's an important difference because that takes into account that women take breaks from their career much more often than men. In fact, over those 15 years, women are only working full-time 28% of the time compared with 59% for men. And this clearly, from the report, is showing that this is because women are most disproportionately affected by caring for their kids, caring for their parents, and that takes them out of the workforce. As a result, when we look at these 15 years, we are seeing the wage gap blow out. It's actually pretty astounding. And we know that even women who are staying in for the whole 15 years are still making less.
Talk about that, because not everyone takes time off to have a family over those 15 years. They're still affected.
Yeah, this is a fascinating statistic from the report. So women who stay in the labor force for the 15 years compared to women who take just a year off. The women who take a year off make 39% less than the women who are working for the entire time. So there are other things going on. And obviously, this is one of those reports where you say, well, okay, great, now what?
But what can women do when they see this report to change this?
This is really hard because as a financial planner, I used to always try to say to my clients way back when, you've got to really argue to get the best benefit and pay package as quickly as you can. So early in your career, I know it's hard, but you've got to practice and you've got to really review these benefits. The other thing you have to do is you have to continue to advocate for yourself. This is very important because we know from many surveys, women argue very well to get raises for the people who work for them, but not for themselves, which is crazy. We also want women to take advantage of retirement planning as early as possible. So while you are working, or maybe you have a company match, put money away. And if you can, squeeze out even a few dollars, even when you're not working.
And obviously, CEOs have a role to play in this as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is about creating a benefit structure that is more friendly to families. And we know that that is a key. So that could be enhanced family leave. That could be more subsidizing of child care. And the reality is that the U.S. is really lagging behind the rest of the world on this. We are the only developed nation that doesn't mandate paid maternity leave.
That's CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Four Maryland high school football players could face life in prison after being charged with raping some of their teammates. The 15-year-olds allegedly assaulted four freshmen on the junior varsity team in the locker room at Damascus High School in Montgomery County, Maryland, north of Washington, D.C. They are charged with first-degree rape. More on the story from CBS News correspondent Chip Reed.
Prosecutors reportedly called the conduct of the defendants astonishingly cruel and are charging the four teens as adults. Attorneys for the teens argue they are only 15, and it was a hazing incident that went to an extreme.
A third straight state championship for Damascus.
Damascus High School has long been a football powerhouse, but the community is now in shock following charges of first-degree rape against four sophomore members of the junior varsity football team. According to the charging documents, the victims told police someone first turned off the lights to the locker room. One victim said two of the suspects then threw him onto the floor and that one suspect held his feet down and then pulled his pants down to his knees before one of the suspects violated him with a broomstick. The suspects were laughing, he said, and then proceeded to do the same thing to other male members on the junior varsity football team. One victim began to cry, while another said he was able to stop them. School district officials have referred to the incident as hazing, bullying, or harassment, and have said that physical abuse will not be tolerated and will receive serious consequences.
I'm offended by the term hazing. It's not hazing. These are crimes.
The suspects told them it was a tradition and the broom started from generations ago. Former Damascus football player David Umanzor says this wasn't his experience while on the team.
Of course we had a horsing around, but would I ever call it hazing? No, it wasn't hazing. It was just us joking around.
David Felsen represents one of the teens accused and wants the case tried in juvenile court.
Being told that you face charges where you could go to jail for the rest of your life is pretty darn intimidating.
Felsen told us he has filed a motion for his client to be tried in a juvenile court. All four of the young defendants have been released on bond.
That's CBS's Chip Reed. While we're on the subject of football, the Washington Redskins, in a controversial move, have picked up Reuben Foster, the linebacker from the San Francisco 49ers, following his second domestic violence arrest. We get more on the story from CBS's Jan Crawford.
Henry out of the backfield, and look who hits him, Reuben Foster.
The Washington Redskins did what no other NFL team was willing to do, claim Reuben Foster off waivers. Head coach Jay Gruden.
He was one of my favorite players in the draft defensively as a player and one of my favorite interviews as a person. What's happened since then, I don't know.
Officers say they arrested Foster after a verbal altercation with Alyssa Ennis, his on-again, off-again girlfriend, turned violent Saturday.
You said your ex-boyfriend did what?
Took my phone and broke it.
and slapped me in my face.
Deborah Epstein has advised the NFL Players Union on domestic violence issues.
They didn't wait to see how this played out. They just grabbed him up.
This isn't the first time Foster has been in trouble with the league. In February, Ennis accused Foster of dragging her by her hair and punching her in the head. She later told authorities she lied about those claims and the charges were dismissed. But the incident led to a misdemeanor weapons charge against Foster, to which he pled no contest. He was also arrested on a marijuana possession charge in January, and those charges were also dismissed. The NFL eventually suspended him for 2 games at the start of the season. Foster's former University of Alabama teammates, who now play for the Redskins, came to his defense.
From everything I've seen of him in college, I've never had a problem. I've never seen any problems out of him. He's a great person.
People are looking for him to fall. People are looking for him to make more mistakes. But, you know, being a human, we all make mistakes. Nobody's perfect.
If the National Football League wants to do something to meaningfully eradicate violence, it cannot be that the only consequence for a player who was arrested multiple times for assaulting his girlfriend is that he's let go by one team and immediately picked up by another team.
Now, we reached out to Foster's agent for comment, but we haven't heard back. But critics of the Redskins have been quick to point out that the team refused to give a second chance to another 49ers castoff, quarterback Colin Kaepernick, even though the team needed a quarterback. Kaepernick, of course, led those protests against police brutality across the nation.
CBS's Jan Crawford. Coming up next, a conversation with the one and only Garth Brooks on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup,
I'm Bill Rakoff. Garth Brooks is as hot as ever 3 decades into his career as a country music superstar, and nowhere was that more evident than last weekend when he played a sold-out Notre Dame football stadium, a concert, by the way, that will air on CBS Sunday evening. CBS This Morning co-hosts Nora O'Donnell, John Dickerson, and Bianca Golodriga welcome Garth to the table for a fun conversation.
Notre Dame Stadium, I think it's like 88 years old. They've had 9 championships, Notre Dame team. What was it like to play in that stadium?
It was cool. It was scary. You know, I'll remember the call the rest of my life. When the call starts, are you familiar with Notre Dame Stadium? yeah, a little bit. So they wanted their first ever concert there. For some reason, they picked us, and I got to tell you, the crowd that showed up stole the show.
Yeah, it was like 88,000 people.
They were very sweet. They were so cool because they were battling weather. They were doing all this, but they came sports-minded game day. They bundled up and they sang their butts off. It was a lot of fun.
Of course, you're used to big crowds, though. We remember over 20 years ago, your big concert in Central Park here in New York City. I believe the last estimates were close to 1 million people in Central Park. Your music transcends all party lines, all music lines. What do you think makes that happen?
I don't know, but it's fun to look out and see all the colors. Mm-hmm. All the races, half guys, half girls. It's good to see. And it's good to see different beliefs out there because, I'm sorry, man, I know this is not a popular thought, but I think it's our differences that it's our strength, you know, and I think we need us all. So I can verify that at the Garth show. We need every one of them. And they're all singing. It's fun.
What's it feel like when you're walking onto a stage that's that big? Does it just feel like a little bit different or do you think, wow, this is big?
If we talk about Notre Dame, it's like you said, it's an older stadium, so there's only one way in, one way out, right? So when they introduce you, you got to walk through the people to get to the stage. So they introduce you, but 15 minutes later, you finally get to the stage because you're hugging everybody, shaking everybody's hand. And by the time you hit that stage, you felt so much like a family that it was just a party from the word go. It was a lot of fun.
What's the challenge in terms of making sure that the people in the back row feel just as included as those that are sitting on the floor in the front row?
Yeah, man, you got to find them. And they, you know, if you do this for a living, you were a fan first. So you've been to concerts and you know what you want to do. One, if I go to a concert, don't dump a whole new album on me. Give me the old stuff. That's what I came there for.
That I know how to sing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then here's the big thing is just you just want that 3 seconds to look right in the eyes of George Strait or Freddie Mercury when I was a teenager. And go, man, thank you. Thank you for what your music's done for me. Well, now that the tables have switched and you're on stage, it's funny. You're looking at everybody for that 3 seconds to go, thank you for my life. Thank you for my kid's life. You
know? Is that something, okay, Hank, stay with me here, Garth. In football, they sometimes say it's only until the first hit that
yes.
you know you're in a game. Is it until you get that moment, that connection, that you know, okay, I'm locked in?
Yeah, it's fun because you're scared to death. You don't want to disappoint anybody. All you can think about is keep your gut sucked in, keep your gut sucked in. You're singing, and 2 lines in, you're lost. It's a party. It's so much fun.
Talk about how country music has evolved over the years.
Well, country music always changes. So now that you're one of the older guys, you're looked upon as one of the traditionalists, right? But when we first started out, you guys remember this, we were not considered the traditionalists. We were the troublemakers, right? So I think it always just turns that page because country music is always changing. It is the news put to music for me. So it's always going to change with time.
How do you or you, do you need to get back to that moment when you were playing for tips that first time? Do you feel that getting place for you? And how do you get back there when you're playing on a stage that's this big, which is really different from the way you started out?
Yeah, they say time is a friend to all things good. I also think time doesn't affect good things. So for me, it's the same as when you first started playing. It doesn't matter if it's five people, if it's a million people in Central Park. It's still all about that one-on-one. If you can establish that, and I got to tell you, Matt, they come there. I know because I went to so many concerts as a fan. You go there wanting that connection, and as an artist, you want that connection, so it's pretty easy to get that connection.
And music is really a family business for you, obviously. Your wife, Trisha Yearwood, we love her, too. We know your children sing as well, your daughters. Talk about the struggle for women in the industry, because you said it is 1,000 times harder for women in country music than
men. Yeah, the phrase is a woman's got to work 1,000 times harder to get a tenth as much. It's just what, and I don't know why. What I really enjoyed about the 90s was the female voice in country music was about 50-50. And I think that brings a whole new voice because women reason. They just do. Guys, we're just guys. We're stupid. We always are. You know, we're always going to try and muscle through everything. But women reason. And when you get a voice of reason, I just think it makes things better.
So Trisha Yearwood, your wife, for those out there who don't know Trisha Yearwood, you guys have been married for a while. You surprised her at the CMAs with the song. Did she really not know what you were going
to
sing?
Didn't have a clue. And hats off to everybody. The studio musicians that cut the song 2 months before, the engineer, they're the only ones that had heard it. And even Robert Deaton, the dude that does everything, he does the Billboard Awards, CMAs, this is the most busy cat on the planet, drives out to your house to listen to the song at your house because there's no other recording of it, to do his notes and stuff. That's pretty sweet to do. So everyone kind of chipped in for the surprise for her.
So did she like it?
Yes, she liked it.
She was happy.
She was. It was good for us, too, as our relationship, because it opened a lot of doors for us to talk about things we never got past. You know, you guys know this. You have the same arguments. I always come to the same place. And this song actually helped us get past a couple of points, which is great. So the song has been a real gift to us.
Do you mind sharing what was one of those struggles you had?
It was just when you have two people in the house that kind of do the same thing, then you always have two people that are loving one another. So what you do is you back down so the other one can do their thing. And with both of you backing down, nothing ever gets done. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of that brave thing of, look, man, just tell me what you're thinking. You're not going to hurt my feelings. You love me. I love you to death. Let's just be really gut-wrenching honest with each other. Yeah. Never ask that from your wife, ever. Because
you know,
it got gut-wrenching
you
honest.
Pandora's box, right?
Women reason, and sometimes they reason too strong.
Yeah, well, sometimes they're too right. That's the problem.
I don't want to overgeneralize. You know, I mentioned that we always think that country musicians are the nicest folk, but every time we talk about people who we interview, and it comes to country music, you guys are grounded. There's a spiritual strength that you have, and you are genuinely very nice.
You're very sweet.
What is it that keeps you going and keeps you so grounded?
I'm about to expose all of rock, pop, and rap, okay? When they're not talking to you guys, they're the sweetest people on the planet. I just think it's a thing that they do for their format. But let's take the group Kiss, okay? You're not going to get crazier than that. They come in to record. They're doing the tribute album in Nashville. Sweetest guys on the planet. I'm blowing their cover right now. Yeah. They were showing baby pictures. They're just the nicest guys. But when they started to walk out on the street, they became them again, right? So I think all of us are humans underneath, and I think you just got to get to it.
You said you went to a lot of concerts. Who are you listening to now? Who's on your playlist?
I got to tell you, of the new stuff that I just love, Ed Sheeran's got my ear right now so much simply because of what all he does out of just what he's playing. Yeah. Gaga has more guts in this business than any male that's in it. So I love it. And I don't think you get better than Adele.
Garth Brooks appearing with CBS This Morning co-hosts Nora O'Donnell, John Dickerson, and Bianca Goladriga. Coming up next, a preview of this week's episode of 48 Hours. You're listening to the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. He has keys to the universe.
Actually, it's a key fob.
Right. You have a fob to the universe. Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Bill Rakoff. On this week's 48 Hours, the story of Danroy Henry, a Pace University football player shot dead by a police officer outside of a bar in Pleasantville, New York in 2010. Officer Aaron Hess was cleared of criminal wrongdoing. His lawyer, Brian Sokoloff.
I'd like somebody to tell me what other alternative Aaron Hess had on the hood of a moving vehicle other than trying to save his own life or closing his eyes and saying his prayers.
But the Henry family has spent 7 years searching for answers.
We're not anti-police. We're just trying to understand what the facts tell us. Was it a justified shooting or was it not justified? Because if it wasn't, it was murder.
We're joined by CBS News special correspondent James Brown talking about this edition of 48 Hours coming up. And it's another case that goes back several years where it's a questionable shooting, and both sides feel like they have questions or grievances unanswered here.
That is always the case in any of these police-involved shootings, for sure. And just as you and I were talking before we actually came on air, one needs to sit back and review and judge fairly the circumstances involved here. But let me be clear that the Henry family made it clear from the start that they were not trying to, or in any way, overtly or covertly, play the race card. They were in pursuit of the truth of what happened because they made it clear that what their son was accused of doing was so far outside of his character by all accounts, not just by the family's account, but neighbors in the neighborhood, on the college campus where he was a scholar athlete across the campus. Everyone had the same things to say about him, a young man of character and integrity and a family of faith. So it's a very heart-wrenching story that I think viewers will feel that palpably when they see the show tomorrow night.
And on the other hand, you have the lawyer for the police officer who says simply this man had a right to defend himself. He felt threatened and he took action, and he's within his purview.
Both attorneys representing the family and the police officer have excellent reputations. And clearly, Mr. Brian Sokoloff, the attorney for Officer Aaron Hess, made a very compelling case strictly from the legal perspective in terms of the decision that his client had to make in a split second. You'll see in the piece, however, one of the bigger questions that really wasn't answered as well was, did Officer Hess have another decision that he could have made, which was to get out of the path of an oncoming car that Officer Hess says was one that was traveling at a high rate of speed? You know, why put yourself in that position as opposed to removing yourself from it? But his lawyer argues that very strongly, indicating that he had no choice given the split second decision that he had to make and that he was hit by the car, Officer Hess, which propelled him on top of the hood.
Defending DJ, a 48 Hours special with special correspondent James Brown. Watch this weekend on CBS and listen anytime to podcasts on radio.com. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Thanks for joining us. A California businessman has opened his heart and his wallet to high school students and teachers after the campfire disaster that devastated the town of Paradise. Real estate developer Bob Wilson, who's 90 years old, gave students and staff at Paradise High $1,000 each in a donation totaling more than $1 million. Here's CBS's Jamie Yukas.
Smiles have been hard to come by for these Paradise High School students ever since suffering through the most devastating wildfire in California history.
This means so much. There's so much to everyone.
Very, very welcome.
90-year-old real estate developer Bob Wilson lives near San Diego. But when he heard about the hardships these students were enduring, he felt compelled to help. About 900 of the 980 young people attending Paradise High School lost their homes.
For me, high school was an idyllic time of my life, you might say.
So I thought about these kids, and I thought about my experience, and I said, you know, if I can just put a smile on their face. And so I decided on the spot I would do this.
Wilson felt the best way he could have a personal, positive impact was through individual donations. He's giving a $1,000 check to all 980 students and their 105 teachers and staff members.
And then the more I thought about it, I thought, what about the whole school? What about the teachers? What about the bus driver, the janitor, and so forth? And so I said, I'll include the entire school.
A lot of kids will just turn the checks over to their families for just basic essential items like food and gas.
Wilson says handing out more than $1 million is making him feel like $1 million.
Let's face it, you know, there's joy in giving, and especially when you do it directly.
Like, he doesn't even know us, but he has it in his heart to give this money to us, to just help us. And it kind of makes my heart smile.
Jamie Yukis, Los Angeles.
Thanks, Jamie. This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Good to have you along. I'm Bill Rakoff. Our next story is one that exemplifies the old military maxim that no one is left behind, not just on the battlefield, but even years later in life and in death. CBS Evening News anchor Jeff Glor has more on an amazing story out of Omaha, Nebraska.
They turned out in droves, braving the bitter cold to honor a man they never met.
Sam would be in awe to see this outpouring of love and support.
Hundreds of strangers in military fatigues and civilian attire, remembering the service and patriotism of 73-year-old Army Private Stanley Clyde Stoltz. The rallying cry for Stoltz began a week ago when the funeral home, concerned that no one would show, posted this notice in the Omaha World Herald. The public is invited to the cemetery to honor a Vietnam veteran with no known family. Some siblings were eventually located, but the notice had gone viral, and the public responded.
First, it came out that no immediate family was going to be there, so I thought, I'll be there. Even though he needs to be, sorry, he needs to be honored.
Stoltz was born in 1945 and grew up on a farm in Iowa.
He had a heart of gold for others, even at times at the expense of caring for himself.
He served his country, but returned home to a nation that wasn't always grateful.
Ready!
President Lincoln once made a promise.
Fire!
To care for him who shall have borne the battle. That promise was kept for this veteran. His sacrifice would not be forgotten.
That's CBS Evening News anchor Jeff Glor. And that's it for the Weekend Roundup. Want to thank you for listening. And we'd like to get your feedback. Send us your thoughts and story ideas to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. As always, find the program online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. The Weekend Roundup produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is our technical supervisor. Christopher Buckley, our production assistant in New York. Janine Santucci is our intern. Have a great week, and thanks for listening. I'm Bill Rakoff, CBS News.